Movie Buff Specialist Phil and John are back, and today we are talking about Captain America the First Avenger and Strays, and Captain America the First Avenger, the final movie of Phase 1 before the Avengers, and it was fun to watch the after credit scene of this one and see that it's literally just a trailer for the Avengers. A really nice flashback there. As a primarily Survivor channel, it's always fun when you watch the previews or something, or you watch the next time on, and like they're trying to talk about something that, you know, like with Second Chance, how they're talking about Second Chance all the time. And it's like, okay, you can't vote for that anymore. It's almost like back in the day when you would buy a Disney VHS and inside it would be like, return this to get a free whatever. And you look at the date on it now and it's like you had to return by January 4th, 1997 or something like that. That's what it was like with this. There's no actual, well, there is a brief post credit scene, but then it's just a trailer. And it was kind of fun to see how they did that. And then we're going to be talking about talking dogs who like to say the F word and hump things. So we're going to be talking about Strays. That's going to be a pretty vulgar conversation, a little bit different from what John and I are used to doing. But it's going to be pretty hard not to say certain things during that part. So I'll try to save all of the vulgarness for that portion of the podcast. So just be prepared for that because, yeah, I'm going to say things that I never thought I would say live on this channel. So please don't report us to YouTube. It wasn't us. It's because of the talking dogs who like to hump the daylights out of everything. But we're starting with Captain America, the First Avenger. And I have to admit, I like this movie. And it was funny because I gave this a 3.5-star review. And John texted me and was not pleased with me for giving it a 3.5-star review. And then he watched it about 2 weeks later. And he also gave it a 3.5-star review. So here we are. Are we at, is this the peak of Marvel, dare I say, even though I haven't seen 90% of movies that follow it? Is this the peak?
Not in my opinion. No. I do think there are better Marvel movies to come still. I think we peak out pretty fast, but I do think there are better Marvel movies to come still.
But
this one was, just so much. Okay. First off, I will say, I was wrong. The Steve Rogers CGI, like the scrawny Chris Evans, does not, that aged really well, surprisingly. There's like one scene at the very beginning where it looks really awkward. Yeah. And the rest of it, he looks totally fine. And of course, they just like superimpose his face and like, I guess they kind of like deep faked him, right? Awkward. In today's day and age, we're talking about that type of thing. But like, this movie holds up pretty well because of the style they chose to do it in. And despite the fact that this feels like, We kind of talked about it with Thor, where there's a lot of like CGI backgrounds. There are a lot of CGI backgrounds in this movie. A lot. And like, it's a lot less of like the physical sets we saw in Thor. But it still feels like it holds up because of the direction they take this film.
It feels purposeful with this one. Yeah. I think with the backgrounds, what I noticed, it's almost like with 300, right? Like 300, in my opinion, is just like a CGI mess. I don't like the story. I don't really like the movie, whatever. But it's purposeful in what it's doing with its CGI. And it's not, oh, we don't have the budget, so we're making bad CGI. It's just, this was cutting edge at the time, and this is what it looked like. And I always talk about the Spartacus TV series, and it's purposeful. It's a stylistic choice. And the Spartacus TV series, one of my favorite TV series of all time. I think it's absolutely phenomenal. This felt purposeful. And for me, as somebody who's not really into Marvel movies, and it was funny having a conversation with John prior to this about how old comic books are. It's funny because they weren't relevant in my life till 2008 because I was never a comic book kid. And so it just never really mattered to me. This was the first movie so far for the Marvel movies that felt like a comic book movie. It felt like it had the same style, sort of, but like the same, I'm trying to think of what word, doesn't matter, as the first two Sam Raimi Spider-Mans, where it was taking itself just seriously enough. The story was enticing enough. The characters were good enough, even though Red Skull is totally comic booky, just as is Green Goblin. But they're comic booky in a way that is fun and enjoyable, and they don't necessarily feel super scary or super villainous, but they are very worthy opponents for our heroes, and our heroes naturally built to having to fight them. I think that's what's good about that. And I felt like Thor lost that. Thor, like, kind of jumped around between who he was fighting and what he was doing. Captain America, I feel like, very distinctly follows that path of we're going to work up to you killing the Red Skull. And I love the story of this. It is an American war propaganda film.
Yes.
Done really well. Set in that era when American war propaganda films were all the rage. I mean, I have all the best picture nominees on my watch list on Letterboxd. It's a lot of American war propaganda films on that list. Like, they were getting nominated for best picture and stuff. But I really like the stylistic choice of Captain America and some of the over-the-top jumps he does and things like that. It felt like a comic book. It didn't need to be grounded in too much reality, but there was enough reality to keep me invested in the real story that was going on.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the success of this one comes from the fact that unlike the four Marvel movies that have really preceded it, this is the first one where we really had archetypical character roles, right? Mm. Like, Captain America is such a cookie-cutter hero. Like, the intrinsically good guy, always looking out for the little guy, those that type of thing, standing up for the bullies despite being smaller. And Red Skull, despite being, again, like someone with the same power set as our hero, is the antithesis of that. Mm-hmm. And because they're such foils, it allows these characters, we don't have to learn more about the characters. We can just watch them. And despite the fact that they're not overly developed, they're still entertaining because they're fitting that archetype so well. It's the same reason people like Star Wars so much, like the original Star Wars so much. It's because these are characters we've seen before. We know how they're supposed to react to situations, and we watch them react to situations. This movie goes exactly the way we think it should, and it's just done stylistically enough to really embrace that war propaganda, because it feels like the movies that they're making in this movie.
Yeah.
Especially when you get to like the last like 30 minutes of this movie, it gets real propaganda-y.
Yeah.
But like, again, it's that stylistic choice, which makes it so that this really sticks out amongst the rest of the Phase 1 movies. Like, we were talking about it with Thor, how Thor is the Shakespearean film, and it stands out because of that. This one, it also feels different. And again, this falls back on what I said about the MCU many times. The MCU is best when it is making a genre film with superheroes, rather than a superhero film in a genre.
Yeah. No, and I'm looking at the comments. I mean, Jordan Alford says top five MCU movie. Raptor says, I think Captain America is probably my favorite of the Phase 1 movies. And I know how I feel about the Avengers. I mean, the Avengers is what made me stop watching Marvel movies. So that'll be a fun podcast next week for sure. But I really enjoyed this movie. And I remember really enjoying this movie when it first came out. And if I'm not mistaken, other than The Incredible Hulk, which is throw that in the trash can, I think this might have the lowest rating of Thor, this, and the first two Iron Mans. Now, I could be wrong, but I think it might in terms of Rotten Tomatoes score. I'm not really talking about like Letterboxd. I think it's like, I'm surprised it only has a 3.2 on Letterboxd. That I am a bit shocked at, because I do find it entertaining. But I guess, especially since some of the later Marvel movies have such high ratings on Letterboxd, I would have thought this one would have had a little bit more. But I just like the story. And I think also there's no explanation needed on who Haley Atwell is, on who Tommy Lee Jones is, on who Chris Evans and Hugo Weaving are. Yeah, they're all cartoony, but they're not cartoony, they're comic booky. That's the difference, right? Like, they are so predictable in their actions, they are so predictable in their speaking, they are so predictable in every single thing. But it's okay to be really predictable, as long as what you're watching is very entertaining and doesn't feel like it's being made stupid for you to follow easier or whatever you want to say. I just found this to be very, very entertaining throughout. I didn't like the side characters at all in Thor, but I thought McDonough was good in this. I really enjoyed Sebastian Stan. And I know obviously Sebastian Stan goes on to be a much bigger part of this franchise. I like Toby Jones. I like Dominic Cooper. Like, I like these characters. I thought they were a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, you talked about the CGI with Chris Evans, and, you know, you were talking about, oh, when they put the face over the body, blah, blah, blah. Nowadays, they're doing it without a purpose. The Irishman, it was done because they wanted Robert De Niro in the lead role. And they didn't want another actor to play such a large role. You know, you see it in a lot of movies now where they're talking about, you know, oh, we can put their face in. I mean, what was the guy's name from Star Wars who's in The Last Jedi, despite being dead for, what, 40 years by the time that movie came out? Peter something. I forget what his last name is.
It's Peter Cushing, and that was not The Last Jedi. I will defend The Last Jedi.
Here, there was The Force Awakens then?
No, it was Rogue One.
Rogue One, that's right. See, I forget that movie even exists. But so all of that stuff, Chris Evans was purposeful. This wasn't to not give somebody a job or anything. I mean, the guy who plays the Chris Evans body double got paid plenty for this movie. Like, he really did make a boatload for playing that role, because it is his body and it's Chris Evans' face, but it needed to be done that way. Because Chris Evans needed to be this really, really scrawny guy, and he's not going to go through a Christian Bale transformation of the machinist to Batman Begins over the course of a 2-month shoot. It's not going to happen. So you put his face on a body double, you do what you have to do. And honestly, I don't think it's aged poorly at all. I think the CGI in the first four movies have aged much worse than the Captain America CGI aged.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. And I think it feels like there's a lot more care in this movie than there have been in some of the other ones, where even like with Thor, like we had Kenneth Branagh behind it, and like we have the Shakespearean aspect of it. I'm just going to keep talking about it because it's like the only other good one in this. I guess there's the first Iron Man 2, and like we saw what Favreau really enjoyed about it, and he brought that comic booky thing to it. It really feels like Joe Jackson brings that, a love for this character. And a character who was like quite controversial when they announced that this was going to be one of the main focuses of the MCU. Like, this is a character who's like, people don't realize enough how B-list these first four characters are. Yeah, like people who read the Avengers and everything, or who read the Avengers growing up, know these characters. But like, when we're getting into this time frame, like, yes, the Avengers have kind of just been like rebooted with the Ultimates and everything like that. But these are characters who were not bringing in money for Marvel for a long time. Mm-hmm. Right? These are characters. This is the reason why they could make. This is why they could get the rights to these characters. It's because nobody else wanted to make movies about them.
Well, I mean, look at the first couple Captain America movies that were made.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just do a quick Google of those movies. They're a joke.
Yeah. I mean, they were literally to like hold rights.
Yeah. Like the 1990 Captain America where Matt Salinger plays him.
Yeah.
Never even heard of it, but look at his costuming. And if you go over and you look at Letterboxd, it has a 1.8. Yeah. I mean, I know people are over dramatic with some of this stuff, but a 1.8 is pretty ridiculously bad. Yeah. And I didn't even know Matt Salinger played him. Mm-hmm. You know, at least you know Adam West plays Batman.
Yeah.
You know that that's a thing, even though you know those are corny. But like, these Captain America movies were a disaster. I mean, go look at the one from 1979. So I get what you're saying. Like, it's easy, but I actually think Captain America out of all of them is the most compelling. I feel like Captain America has the most heart. I think Iron Man with Tony Stark, Tony Stark is a interesting character, but Tony Stark is so one note a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like Captain America, it's the underdog going to come from, you know, going to prove everybody wrong and be worth something and defend his country and all that. And it's pure emotion the entire time. He's not the snarky guy. He's not the God from another country who has to come down and adjust to life. He's a normal guy. And I think that's why Captain America is an easy one to relate to. And I also think that's why the Captain Americas are generally the best received movies in this franchise.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it does come from the fact that, like, again, we get into a lot of the propaganda aspect of it. I think you see this, and you Captain America is just such, like, Steve Rogers is such an idealistic human being, especially like an American, right? Like, mm-hmm. We have the scene where he's talking to Stanley Tucci for the first time, and it's like, do you want to kill Nazis? No, I don't want to kill Nazis. I don't want to kill anyone. I just don't like bullies. Right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not that altruistic like outlook, which is why he's chosen for the project in the first place, but also is why it makes it so easy to relate to this character because this is a character that we're seeing kind of without flaw, right? He's your hero without flaw. His flaw is that he's connected. Like, essentially, the only flaw he really gets in this movie is that he is connected to other people, right? His connections to other people are his flaws. They're his weakness. But this is what people want to strive to be, right? We want to be as altruistic as Steve Rogers. We want to be the person who stands up and, like, you know, jumps on a grenade to protect the people around us, right? Like, we want to be that person. We don't necessarily want to be the billionaire mogul who's, like, you know, partying all the time. We don't necessarily want to be an alien, right? Like, it's just harder to relate to these other characters where he's the American dream. He's the American hero, and he just completely embodies all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and like, I also think it's a very easy thing when you're setting it with war. I do think war is a very easy thing for people to understand. And, you know, John, you always say the Nazis are too easy of villains.
Yes.
But in a comic book, the villains are supposed to be easy. I like a complicated villain for sure. I really do. Like, I like a Joker villain where you're like, he's crazy, but he's not really that awful some of the time in that movie. Like, there's a lot of bad that he does, but he's not always awful. Sometimes it's nice to just have a very straightforward evil villain, and that's what Red Skull is, and the Nazis are. But if you're going to be Captain America, the most over the top hero, the most synonymous, you know what I mean? Like, if you say that person is Captain America, everybody knows what you mean. Knows what you mean. You know, I just watched Panama, and Terry Deitz is Captain America. You know what that means? He's unbeatable. That means he is everything that, like, your dad wants to be, that a kid wants to be when they grow up. That's Captain America. So for a character that is that easy to define, the villain should be simple.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that really works in this movie. Like, it really, 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 really works. And I like that it really is the story of Captain America, because everybody, I'm assuming, when they watched this, knew who Winter Soldier was going to be. I had no idea who the hell the Winter Soldier was, but I'm assuming it's the same character, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it always has been.
Yeah, okay. So everybody knows who that's going to be. So the Sebastian Stan, you know, falling off the train thing didn't surprise. And it's not surprising when all of a sudden, like, there's going to be more to that story. But for me, that was a good moment, because I'm like, wow. You know, I remember the first time I watched it, I'm like, wow, I'm surprised they killed that guy. That's crazy. I didn't see that coming. And the fact that they really made this Steve Rogers movie and they didn't try to make it a bunch of other things being put in. You know, as I said with Thor, it felt unfocused at times because, like, you had Natalie Portman, it's Stellan Skarsgård, you had Thor, you had Loki, you have Anthony Hopkins, you have whatever's going on in that ice thing. You have a lot going on in that movie. In the Iron Man movies, they try to give more to Terrence Howard / Don Cheadle. They try to do Rhodey, I guess. They try to do a little bit with that. And then with The Incredible Hulk, it's just a disaster. This movie, they bring in Black Widow. This movie doesn't do any of that. It just lets it be Steve Rogers' movie. It doesn't try to bring in, because I don't know what the timeline is, so I might sound like an idiot saying this, but it doesn't try to bring in Captain Marvel or anything like that. It just tells the story of this one character.
Yes, and it's really convenient that, like, the timing allows them to do that. And I think it's part of the reason why they make it this period piece too, right? And it's even in the title of the film, right? Captain America, the First Avenger. Even though, like, the word Avenger doesn't really make sense in terms of what he's doing, but that's fine. But he's the first one, right? And, like, yes, we have these side characters. We have side characters who become, like, pretty prolific, right? Like, we have Howard Stark in this movie, who's been referenced in pretty much every movie that we've seen in this series so far. We have Haley Atwell's Peggy Carter, who goes off and has a 2-season TV series based on the character after this. But it still is so focused on Steve Rogers, and it's done in a way where you don't feel like you're missing anything from those ancillary characters. Still, they're still there. They're still present. You see the impact they're having, but the impact they're having is all based on their impact on Steve himself and not just on the grander scale of things.
Yeah. And like, it is funny how many successful series this did have spinoffs of, right? Or like how many like characters like really do spin off from this, because they all do feel so secondary in this movie. And yet you could argue that it's the best side characters of those first five movies.
Almost every single one of these characters appears in the Agent Carter TV series.
Yeah.
Oh, at least once they survive. Yeah. And I mean, like, again, you have two heroes from this that continue on throughout the series. Yeah. I mean, other than like, we did talk about how, like the Incredible Hulk has some that like branch off into more characters later on in the MCU. We talked about it with some, but this is the one that kind of has like the memorable ones, right? Like,
yeah,
like you said, like Neil McDonough's in this movie, which I totally forgot until I rewatched it. And he plays this like super cartoony American soldier. And it's just like, yeah, this feels great. Give me Dum Dum Duggan every day.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love Dum Dum. I think Dum Dum's great. And Dum Dum almost has the feel of like a J. Jonah Jameson, but obviously in a much smaller role.
Yeah.
Like where it is, it's so over the top, but it's a great, like, yeah, I'd follow that guy into battle. You know, no questions asked. Of course, I'm going to follow him into battle. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was really genuinely surprised how much I enjoyed, because I remembered liking the first Iron Man. And then as I was rewatching it, I was like, this is pretty good, but like, okay. And then obviously the Hulk is what it is. And then Iron Man 2, I didn't really like that much. Thor, I thought was disappointing. I remembered liking this as a kid. And I was like, maybe it's not, maybe I really am right about all these Marvel movies. Maybe they're all just bad. And then this was a big surprise for me that I liked it as much as I did. And that like, really, there wasn't really much I would change with this movie.
No, I think it's done in a way where it's really well focused. And there are like these little Easter eggs in this movie, which I think are hilarious. When they're at the World Expo, you remember the costume that's in like the display?
What is the costume?
That is the first Human Torch's costume.
Mm.
Chris Evans, of course, having played the Human Torch previously in the two Fantastic Four movies that preceded this film,
which were very successful.
They brought in money.
They were terrible. Oh my
god. They were bad.
Just make them to make them, right?
Yep.
Yeah, those were really bad.
They were really bad. But the fact that we have Chris Evans coming over from that, Chris Evans kind of had this like weird thing going on in like that 2000s to 2010 before becoming Captain America, which is what everyone remembers him for, where he actually had like a lot of really good performances and a lot of like cultful films that people kind of forgot about. Because he was in Danny Boyle's Sunshine. And he's fantastic in that. He was in Snowpiercer. He's fantastic in that. He played Lucas Lee in Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And then he became Captain America. And, you know, everyone kind of forgot about everything else he was in previous to that. Also, not to mention, he was like one of those like teenage rom-com movie guys for a while.
Yeah, and he was in The Iceman, which was a movie that a lot of people didn't see with Michael Shannon. Like he was in like a lot. He was in a lot of stuff. He was definitely recognizable up to this point. Blows my mind that Snowpiercer is as old as it is. That just really bothers.
2008,
2013. It's 10 years old.
Okay, yeah.
I didn't realize right after this. So old. Yeah, it's after this, but it's still like at that time where like people knew who he was, right? He was a good casting choice. And I do wonder, like, you know, I mean, obviously there's so much backstory on what they do with these movies nowadays. Because everybody knows, oh, this is the story of who was going to play this role or who was going to play this role. And I do wonder, like, how did they land on Chris Evans out of everybody? You know, how did his name become the one for this?
This is also the role that you don't hear a lot about other people being in consideration for ever.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. But he's perfect. I think he does capture, I mean, it also helps that he like captures that like Boy Scout look, despite being like ridiculously ripped and everything. Like, he still has that Boy Scout feel to him, which is so important for Captain America.
Yeah, and I, you know, I wonder with him playing the Human Torch, did that help him get this role, or was that like a red flag when they were doing it? because he'd already played a superhero now, right?
Yeah.
So he's already played one. Are they worried that he can or can't play this? But I do agree with you. He has the look for Captain America, because when you're watching him be scrawny, and obviously it's not his body, but it's still mostly his face, you buy that this would be a guy who would, you know, kind of be walked all over, but I just want to be a hero. And then when he becomes Chris Evans, you're like, oh yeah, it's Chris Evans. He does. You do have to have like a very particular, like innocent looking face to do this, right? Like you're not going to have Tommy Lee Jones play this role, even if Tommy Lee Jones was younger, because Tommy Lee Jones has such a rugged look to him. Mm-hmm. You're not putting him in this spot, but you also don't want to put somebody who is just out of this world, unbelievably good looking, where you're like, God, it could like, they would never be walked all over by these people.
Well, like you could have Chris Hemsworth play this role, right?
Yeah.
Like you had Chris Hemsworth in Thor because he looks so handsome and built and everything, right? But you couldn't have that same type of person playing this role, which is why we get the Chris debate.
Mm-hmm. What's the Chris debate?
Well, there are three Chrises that lead the MCU, and there's a debate on which one's the best.
So it's Chris Pratt. Oh, yeah, because it's Chris Hemsworth. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, most people probably lean towards Chris Pratt at this point, right?
I think so. Chris Pine was in the conversation for a while, despite not being in the MCU too. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's. We'll talk about Chris Pratt when we get to Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. I think Guardians of the Galaxy was just such a surprise for Sony people that one stands out amongst the other. And like, now Guardians of the Galaxy kind of gets to be our generation's superheroes, as opposed to like Captain America. So kind of your dad's superhero a little bit.
Captain America is our grandfather's superhero.
Yeah, but you know, like that's what I'm saying. Like it's so removed where Guardians now kind of gets to be like our superheroes.
That's true.
Our generation likes.
One thing I do want to like circle back on is the idea of like the Red Skull as a villain here, because I think it's really important that technically the villains of this movie aren't Nazis. Like they start as Nazis, but then we get to the point where he's like, no, I'm going to overthrow the Nazis because I'm more evil than the Nazis. Mm-hmm. And that's saying something. When you have a villain who's like, I am more evil than Hitler, they're pretty damn evil.
Yeah.
And the casting choice of Hugo Weaving here is great. I mean, Hugo Weaving does such a good role in these type of like villainous roles. Obviously, like him in The Matrix was great. People probably often forget that he was the voice of Megatron in the Michael Bay Transformers movies. And again, here he's just imposing enough. I really like the way they got his face to look as Red Skull, like the Red Skull himself. He looks so imposing, and like when he rips off his face and like shows it to Cap for the first time, it's a terrifying scene, especially because like we just saw him go toe to toe with Cap because they have the exact same power set. It's just this perfect foil. And yes, Red Skull is the most prolific Captain America villain of all time. And yes, he represents Nazis and Hydra, two very evil things. But the way he's foiled here is we see him and his ambition and how that contrasts to everything Steve is working towards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, would that have been Captain, like, you know, like you always talk about like if the Nazis had won the war, right? Like if that had happened, and it's like, would that have been what Captain America would have looked like from the Nazi point of view, right? Like, would it have just been reversed of like everything that the Americans were about? Yeah, I like Hugo Weaving. I mean, Hugo Weaving takes on like weirdo roles, I guess is like the nicest way to put it. Yeah. And he normally nails them. I mean, he was good in Cloud Atlas. He's good in the Lord of the Rings movies. You know, obviously iconic at this point in The Matrix, even if I don't like that franchise at all. But he does a really good job in these weirdo roles. And Red Skull is a weirdo role.
Not to mention his role in like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah, I've never seen that. So that one I could.
Well, that movie's a lot of fun. And Hugo Weaving's fantastic in that movie. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting. It's really interesting seeing this because it almost feels like Hugo Weaving isn't quite your typical villain. because like he has that contrast, especially because he has that contrast in people's minds, right? Where he's Mr. Smith in the Matrix, but he's, like you said, he's also Elrond in Lord of the Rings, which are kind of like polar opposites.
So he's like, in V for Vendetta too.
Oh yeah, I guess he is V, isn't he?
Yeah.
So like he kind of sits in. I think from a casting perspective, he is one of those people where you see him and you're not sure if he's the good guy or the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's perfect for this role because you very easily learn that this character is the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. I mean, Captain America, Brecht von Riedem says, so happy Phil enjoyed this movie. Hopefully there will be more to come. I can't guarantee it. But I'm very happy I enjoyed this too, because, you know, as somebody who avoids these movies kind of like the plague, it was nice to watch this and just be into it, you know, just be into it. Cause this is a movie I wouldn't have rewatched if we hadn't done this podcast.
Yeah. I don't know if I would have rewatched it if we hadn't done this podcast, and I might not, and I'm not as heavy on these movies as you are. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's nice to
you were. I mean, what did you think you were going to give this movie coming in? Cause it wasn't,
I thought it was going to be a three. Like I said, it's been a while since I had watched it. I don't know if I would have put it in my top five MCU movies previously. I think it's definitely a contender moving forward, and I'll be I don't think it's possible for it to drop out of my top 10, but like it's questionable if it remains in the top five.
Cool. There you go. It's my number one so far. You know, make sure everybody's following along with my rankings as I unveil them every week. It's my number one so far, but we'll get to the Avengers next week and we'll see if the Incredible Hulk is worse.
I hope obviously. So.
Yeah, I hope
so. I really hope that remains the worst one.
I am praying. But let's talk about Strays. Let's jump over to a new release, a movie that, much like everything else this summer, is just being slaughtered by Barbie and Oppenheimer. Can we just talk about Barbie on this last weekend made $17.1 million. It lost out to Gran Turismo by $0.2 million. And this movie's been out for a month now.
We should also take into consideration Gran Turismo's numbers also include the 2 weeks of advanced screenings.
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's absolutely insane.
It's now the highest grossing movie of the year.
Yep.
And it's on track to become the highest grossing Warner Brothers movie of all time.
Yeah. Which, does that count New Line or no?
I would assume so.
I just want, because, I mean, Return of the King is New Line, isn't it?
Yeah, but like I'm pretty sure the Warner Brothers record holder right now is the Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Okay.
And it's very close to beating that at this point.
Yeah, it's made $1.34 billion worldwide.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And I really think, you know, we've talked about it all summer now since we started this podcast. It was the first movie we did.
Yeah.
This is our fifth episode. We took a week off. So it's literally been six weeks.
Yeah.
And we're still talking about Barbie. And I'll say it again, and I've said it a million times, I really think that Barbie and Oppenheimer were amazing for the film industry. And I also think that they're now going to try to make another Barbie and they're going to try to find this again. And lightning is not going to strike twice. Like I am sad for the person who tries to make the next Barbie movie.
Yeah.
Cause it's not going to be the success that this movie is. This is lightning struck. Mm-hmm. Lightning struck with this movie. And it's insane how much money this movie has made. And Oppenheimer now is the highest grossing domestic film ever to never reach number one at the box office.
What a crazy stat.
Right? So like Barbie is in, I don't actually know what it is like all time right now because I don't have it in front of me. But Barbie is, wait, hang on. I do have it in front of me. So you're talking domestic all time. This is just domestic though. How do you find this? Box Office Mojo is not helping me out right now, John. Maybe I'll have to, I'll figure it out at some point. But, oh, here we go. Overall records, top lifetime grosses. Domestically, Barbie is currently number 14.
Yeah.
Domestically. 14. I mean, that's incredible.
Yes. Especially when you look at that's the incredible. Other movies on that list.
And actually, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King is all the way down at number 53. Granted, it was 2003, so that's different. But so number 14, and if you go worldwide, Barbie is currently number 18 all time.
All time.
All time. It's still behind the Super Mario Brothers by 19 million worldwide. So it is still right behind that. The 18th highest grossing movie of all time. Mm-hmm. It just passed The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
So it's just wild. I mean, and then the craziest part of this entire thing is Oppenheimer is number 111 all time, and it came out the same opening weekend as number 18 of all time.
Yeah.
We're never going to see anything like this ever again. Yeah. And Strays is a movie that, you know, is going to pretty much go lost a little bit to time here. And it's been tough. It's been a tough time to do this podcast because Barbie and Oppenheimer are still all the talk. And we can't just sit here and talk about Barbie and Oppenheimer all the time. We got to keep finding new movies. And our Demeter review, that was our lowest watched one because that movie made nothing.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it was a good movie.
Yeah, I liked it. And now I look at Strays, and Strays in its opening week made $8.2 million.
Yep. Very low.
Very low.
To be fair, it was also going up against a superhero movie in Blue Beetle.
Mm-hmm.
But even Blue Beetle didn't make that much. Yes, it won the box office last week with, what, $25
million? Yeah. No, but that was 2 weeks ago because now this past week, Blue Beetle dropped below Barbie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. And I don't know, Strays is also a movie that's like kind of hard to get people out to, right? Like it's advertised as the talking dog movie for adults, which is already like a very niche group of people to watch this movie.
Yeah.
And then you also have, in fact, it's like this like crass, crude humor that we haven't had, that like those type of movies haven't had a lot of success over the last several years.
Yeah, nobody's really looking for the super bad kind of style anymore. It's like humor has become a little bit softer. And I think that's why I really actually enjoyed Strays, because I thought Strays was a lot of penis jokes. It was a lot of humping jokes. It was a lot of cursing jokes. It was very immature humor.
Yeah.
Which I don't think we've had done well in a long time. And I never got tired of the fact that these were cute little dogs who were cursing at each other. And that was what the entire movie was. I literally never got tired of it. And I thought this movie was so much funnier than it had any right to be. And I thought that the movie actually had a little bit more depth to it than it had any right to have.
Yes. So much depth to this movie. Shocking. I texted you right after seeing this. Like, I cannot believe the topics this movie handles.
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about, like, dogs. There is a scene in this movie where a dog tries to get a set of keys with his penis.
Yeah. Best part of the movie.
I mean, yes. It's a hilarious scene. But the point of the matter is, like, that's a scene in this movie, and it is dealing with things like abusive relationships and moving on and, like, friendships and how they can help you through abusive relationships. The themes of this movie are so heavy, mm-hmm. and it's all in this crude humor talking dog movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and yeah, I mean, the abusive relationship look of he just wants to keep going back. He wants to keep going back. He's going to keep going to his owner, who is clearly trying to get rid of him, but no, he must. It's like, what gives him purpose?
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. Like, I love that this goes there with a movie about a dog. And I mean, at the end of the movie, when he's like, I try to help now the other strays, it's like, I mean, that there's more emotion and heart to that than there are in a lot of movies that are trying to talk about this actual topic between humans. Yeah. And he doesn't want to go and have an owner because he has his friends and he helps the other strays. I mean, like I never thought that this is where this was going to end. But what I liked about this movie so much is that it never actually felt like it was going too dark and too serious.
No.
It always had a levity to it that was necessary for a movie about talking dogs who curse at each other. And I really enjoyed it. I really did. Like, I enjoyed everything. I thought the voice acting was great in the movie, across the board. Josh Gad's little bit in there about the narrator dog was just phenomenal. Yeah. Like, I thought
that was incredible.
I liked the callbacks to other dog movies. I liked the part where Will Forte is like, did you see the end of Marley and Me? He's like, no, I didn't. Nobody has. But I know the dog dies. That's how everybody is with Marley and Me. Nobody's watched that movie. You just know the dog dies. I really enjoyed this a lot. Mm-hmm. And we have the comment here from Raptor. It's very throwback to mid-2000s. It really is. And maybe that's just not what people are clamoring for right now. And that's okay. Because I think the reason why people stop clamoring for these types of movies is because they get done very, very poorly so often. And then people say, I don't need to watch another movie like that. How many stoner comedies did we get in the mid-2000s to the point where we don't need stoner comedies anymore? Like, we really just don't need to keep seeing the same Seth Rogen, James Franco style over and over and over and over again. I felt like this movie was actually kind of a breath of fresh air. And I didn't think I was going to say that. I very much knew I was going to watch this movie because my wife thinks, like, loves dogs. That's why I thought I was going to watch this movie. I did not think I would actually laugh throughout the entire movie. And I did. I laughed. No matter how immature it was, I laughed. When they were tripping, I was laughing really hard. When
I was laughing uncontrollably at that
point. Yeah. When they're slipping on poop, I'm all about it. Like, that was when he's humping the gnome saying it's his son. I'm fine with it. Like, I'm fine with it. Like, I thought it was very funny. And maybe it's just because I like Will Ferrell and Jamie Foxx. Maybe that's enough to put this over the top. But yeah, I this movie was a box office disaster, much like Demeter. This one only has made $21 million worldwide on a budget of $46 million. Domestically, only $16 million. I don't see another talking dog movie coming out anytime soon, at least not for adults. But again, how much of this is just because Barbie will not go away?
That's a really big thing that studios need to consider is, like, are these movies failing because they're, like, no one's interested in them, or are they just failing because Barbie's here?
Yeah.
And especially when we're dealing with a comedy like this. So, interesting thing, when I rolled up to this movie, the people in front of me to get tickets, there was a grandmother and her two, like, 9 to 12 year old grandchildren. And they're like, yeah, we're going to go to Strays. They're like, that is a rated R movie. What are you doing? But you know what? Teach their own. I sit down, and as soon as Will Forte comes on screen, and, like, you know, he says fuck for the first time, this grandma is laughing the entire movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, cool. That's great. Like, that's funny. But when you have this type of comedy, as in contrast with, like, Barbie, which people think is more geared towards children, What are parents going to take their kids to, right? Like, what are people going to take people to? They're going to go to Barbie rather than this talking dog movie. And it's just really hard to compete. This movie came out 4 weeks after Barbie, and it still had no chance.
Well, okay, so couple things here. I also think Barbie, for the first time in a very long time, I'm trying to think of the most recent movie that wasn't a superhero movie. I'm talking, like, not the Avengers.
Yeah.
When was the last time people were going to the theater to see a movie 2, 3, 4, 5 times?
I mean, not us. It would have to be. I don't even know.
I don't think people are going to see the second Avatar 3 or 4 times in a theater. It's too long.
Yeah.
They might have gone twice. They might have gone once and then gone again. But I don't think people were going that. I think that there's probably people out there who have seen Barbie in theaters 5 times.
I don't doubt it whatsoever.
Because
I think there are people out there who have seen it many more than 5 times.
Yeah. Like, this could be like, I'm going, I got nothing to do. Oh, you haven't seen Barbie yet? I'll go with you. And especially in this day and age of Stubbs and Regal with their Max Pass, which is the one I have, and things like that, where you can see 3 movies a week and it's all on a $20 whatever.
Yeah.
People can go if you live in Los Angeles or New York City, it's almost guaranteed you have Stubbs. It's almost guaranteed because one movie out there is $16-$17.
Yeah.
Where I live in Florida, I can go to a movie, a matinee, that's $7. But you can't do that in the big cities. In the big cities, though, if you have Stubbs and you go see this movie three times, you could see it three times in a week and you paid $20. That's it.
Yeah.
I think that's happening. And whatever Stubbs has as their distribution agreement, whatever, where their AMC is allowing $20 to be done, every time somebody's getting a ticket, the movie is still getting something for that.
Yeah.
Just because that's $20 doesn't mean that, oh, you bought it three times and that means that, you know, the people who created Barbie get the same amount. No, no, no. They get a percentage for each time that somebody goes in to see that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people are seeing this movie so many times. Look at a movie like Blue Beetle, right? So I know we're talking Strays, but let's talk about some of these other movies. Blue Beetle comes out of is a $104 million budget. Not a big budget for a superhero movie by any means. Actually comes out and has a pretty decent opening weekend with $25 million. Now, with $25 million, it's never going to make $104 million. But the reviews on it are pretty good. It's a superhero movie, which, you know, it might not be one people have heard of, but who the hell was clamoring for Ant-Man when Ant-Man came out?
Yep.
So this movie comes out, and to this point, it made $25 million its first weekend. Right now, domestically, it's only made $46 million. Worldwide, it's made $81 million. On a $104 million budget because of Barbie and Oppenheimer. And then you look at Mutant Mayhem, a movie with incredible reviews, absolutely incredible reviews, $98 million at the domestic box office. Now, it was a budget of $70 million. So it did okay, depending on what their P&A looked like. But worldwide, only $135 million. Barbie made more than that in its opening weekend.
Yeah.
And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, people love the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. People will go see those movies, and it's animated. It's in the style of Into the Spider-Verse and all that. And it's getting great reviews, and people still aren't going to see it because of Barbie and still to this extent because of Oppenheimer. That's insane. And there's a lot of movies. I'm glad we did this podcast at this time because it made me watch Grays and it made me watch Demeter. And even though neither one of those movies are movies where it's like, oh my God, you have to absolutely watch this movie. I liked Strays more than I liked Barbie, and I don't really care what that means about me as a person. I like Strays more than I like Barbie. I probably would have missed Strays if I was just a normal person who was like, oh, what's playing? Oh, it's still Barbie and Oppenheimer. If you go on Rotten Tomatoes, that's what's showing up. Mm-hmm. Strays didn't get very good reviews. I think people were unnecessarily hard on this movie. But these movies are really suffering because of Barbie. Barbie made $7.7 million on Sunday. Why is a movie on sixth weekend making $7.7 million on Sunday?
Yeah, that's wild.
Wild.
But like, we'll bring it back to Strays. Like, this is, like you said, like, this is a movie that people are going to miss. And I think it's a fun one. Both of us gave it, what, 3 stars?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it was a fun movie. It was, yes, I don't think this movie was what I expected it to be. I wasn't as crass as I thought it would be. Like, it's still a pretty crass movie, but it wasn't as far as I thought it would be. And I felt like the characterizations, it was really fun kind of seeing Will Ferrell in one of his more...
He was playing Elf.
Like, yeah, it feels more like Elf or like a Stranger Than Fiction character, right? Like that, like, kind of heartwarming, easygoing character who's just like down on their luck trying to like get back to whatever they're trying to do. It felt like a really good idea to contrast that with Jamie Foxx's character and just being like this harsher character and stuff. And like, it's the naivety of what was his character's name?
In what?
No, in this movie, what was Will Ferrell's character's name? The dog's name, Reg, of Reggie's character. And like, again, like that contrast with like Will Forte as the owner, because like you see, as soon as you see Will Forte, you understand he is the worst type of dog owner.
Yeah,
and he's essentially playing the same character from Tim and Eric's $1 billion movie, and it's hilarious. I love it. It was so funny. As soon as he stepped on screen, I couldn't help myself. And it was the point where I was like, yes, I know I'm going to like this movie. And it's like the first scene in the movie.
Yeah. And I do think like a lot of this comes down to is this your type of humor or not? Because I think Will Forte is really funny. Some people don't think Will Forte is really funny. I think that the premise of I want to get back to my owner so I can bite his dick off is phenomenal. I think that's very funny. That's 10 out of 10 humor to me. That might not be 10 out of 10 humor to everybody else, but I love that type of like, you know, that's the plot. This guy wants to get back and that's what he's going to do. And I love that that is the story. That is the driving force this entire time, is that we need to get him back so he can bite his owner's dick off. I'm fine with that. I think it's funny. Like, good. Yeah. But it is your style of humor. I mean, yeah. I think this is my style of humor. It's why Anchorman and Step Brothers, you know, Anchorman is my number one Will Ferrell, but Step Brothers is the one I've watched the most.
Yeah.
Step Brothers is ridiculous. Step Brothers is the lowest brow of humor there can be.
Yeah.
And yet I can't help but watch it because I think it's funny when he gets the fancy sauce and he wants to beat up, you know, whoever for taking the fancy sauce. And when they wipe their butt with the carpet or the rug, whatever it is, because they ran out of toilet paper and then they have to go shop for toilet paper. I think that humor is funny. Some people don't. Strays, I just think, hit the humor but also hit the heart in a way that I really just wasn't expecting. And that's it.
I wonder if it like hits different for like our generation. Cause like it has that, like, it's like this really awkward, like Homeward Bound type of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think I think that's kind of what they're going for here, right? Where they like, they're trying to prey on that sentimentality that like people our age would have for that type of movie. Right. I mean, again, it's a talking dog movie for adults, right? So it's kind of like supposed to harken back on the idea of like these talking dog movies from when you were kids. But it's specifically, like, I think people our age really had that, because we had that a bit at that time, like when we were growing up, there were a lot of talking dog movies and stuff. And I think like it's so important that they like give us like all these different types of characters, and we see their flaws and we see them overcoming their flaws. The one dog, the Randall Parks character, phenomenal. Like, and like when you get to the point where like you find out that he's wearing this cone intentionally, he intentionally wears this cone to kind of like soften the world around him. Mm-hmm. Like, you feel for him at that point, right? And like, this is a talking dog movie. Like, you shouldn't be having this type of connection to these characters. But I felt like I was connecting more to these characters than I have in a lot of movies I've seen recently.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I feel like it hit all the types that you need to hit, right? Your fake tough guy, your hopeless, whatever, your guy who's got like some sort of like social anxiety, whatever you want to call it. I think they were all very relatable. You know, I really do. And I think these are characters. I think it's funny because if you just took away the fact that they were dogs and you made them humans, every one of these characters you've seen a million times in a movie. Not as good of a movie if they're humans, because you have seen them all so many times. And the dog thing, I think, does definitely elevate this. But I also think, like, and like, I enjoyed this. Mm-hmm. I don't need everybody else to enjoy it, but I do think that some of the people who, like, you know, the critics for this movie, I think sometimes critics want to be taken more seriously.
Yeah.
And giving a movie like this a good review is not necessarily a great way to be taken seriously. It's really not. Like, because this is like more of a low, in a year where you've had already Barbie and Oppenheimer, you've had, I can't think of any other movies other than, but like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like all these movies, it's hard to then turn around and be like, ah, yes, I really enjoyed Strays. You must go out and watch this movie. But it, you know, I think that sometimes you just need to like, be like, that kind of was good. That was better than I thought it was, had any right to be. And this wasn't your typical, this wasn't your highness or some nonsense garbage like that.
No, I think this is a movie that actually would have done really well if we still had like video stores.
Yeah, I agree.
This is the type, I mean, we haven't really talked about it, but like streaming has kind of taken away this like the cult classic aspect of things, where people would go to a video store and like people would rent movies, and like secondary sales were so big for some movies, right? I mean, some of our favorite movies are successful because of that secondary market on them. And this is the type of movie that I feel like it might do well on streaming. Like, so this might be a movie that comes up and when people are like doing their doom scroll through Netflix or whatever and be like, oh yeah, sure, I'll give this a watch. And I hope they do, because like it is an entertaining movie. It's an hour and a half. Like, it's an hour and a half comedy. It's what you expect sitting down for it. But it feels much better constructed than these movies usually are, using these things. Like, we're seeing moments of abandonment, and we're seeing, you know, hatred in Jamie Foxx's character for the fact that he was abandoned because of a mistake he made, and his unwillingness to admit that he made the mistake that caused that situation to happen. And he shifted that hatred onto humans in general. And then, like, we see him overcome that and be happy again. Like, there are so many little parts of this movie that are just so genuine that make it so much better than your average movie of the same ilk.
I do have to say, though, terrible dog owners there.
Yes.
The thing, like, horrible. Nipped the girl's leg because she stepped on its foot. I saw no blood. This dog did not latch on and like attack. And then they just give it away immediately.
No. They were going to put it down, Phil.
Yeah, that's bad, man. And it's your own kid. It's not like it bit a stranger and now you've like gone to court and you don't have a choice. Like, that was the one part I was like, well, that was kind of weak. There had to be more to that, right?
Maybe, you know what? There are bad. The entire movie's about shitty dog owners, right? Like, look at it. The person with the best dog with the best owners is the guy who works as a is the dog that works as a therapy dog.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have like a specific owner. The female. What's the female dog's? Who is the actress for the female?
Isla Fisher is the actress.
It's Isla Fisher, right? Isla Fisher's character. Her owner doesn't even care about her because she has a new dog, right?
Yeah.
Like, doesn't care whatsoever. Obviously, we've talked about how Will Forte is an awful owner. And that's without even talking about the fact that he owns this dog because his girlfriend broke up with him when she found out he was cheating on her.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, Will Forte's character is despicable in this movie. Like, we're not supposed to like the humans at all. But then there's this little girl lost in the woods, and you're just like, right, there are good humans in this. And like, you can get over it and be better. Heck, one of the humans, you talk about the narrator dog. The narrator dog's just like, little do they know, he's killed a bunch of people and they're all in his back trunk. And it's like, I'm sorry, what? Yeah. Like, the humans in this movie are awful.
Yeah, no one ever listens to me. And I think a lot of that was just because, you know, sometimes in these movies, the humans are so overly positive towards the dogs. Yeah. And the dog changed their life, blah, blah, blah. I think it was funny to show the opposite end where it's like, this dog ruined my life. Please get out of here. I have no need or use for you. And I think this was a movie that went there. You know, I think it did. Yeah. I think it like pushed that boundary and pushed the issue and did so in an entertaining way. And it's a movie I'll definitely be watching again. I can't say the same for Demeter, even though I gave them the same amount of stars, but this is a movie that like, there aren't a lot of other movies that are like it. And like Demeter, there's a lot of horror movies that I'd rather watch in October and September. This is a movie that like, if you're just in the mood for like a comedy with dogs doing funny stuff. I mean, I love that the female dog pees like a man. Yeah. Takes its leg up and pees. I think that's hilarious. There's a lot of good dog humor. Like it's a good lighthearted, vulgar comedy that also has very serious moments.
I mean in a world where we talk about how poorly written a lot of movies are, this movie was really well written.
All right, John, do you have anything else you want to say about Strays?
No, I mean, if you're just like, if it's like a Sunday afternoon and you're like, I got time to go see Strays, it was fun.
And because of what is happening with Barbie and Oppenheimer, next week we're going to talk about Gran Turismo, because I'm not watching the first two Equalizer movies to watch the third one. And I really don't want to watch Blue Beetle. And Gran Turismo is the only one I can guarantee that is currently out that is going to be playing in the theater near me. Gran Turismo didn't have a very good opening week, $17 million. And John, you talked about it. It had 2 weeks of pre-release, whatever, because it was doing its best to avoid Barbie and Oppenheimer, but it just couldn't run away fast enough. Only made $17 million domestic, made $53 million worldwide, but it's the best we got right now. So we're going to be watching Gran Turismo as our movie next week, and we're going to be doing that with the Avengers. So that's what we got going. Also, the estimated budget for Gran Turismo, just for anybody who's keeping track at home, is $100 million. So
those cars are expensive, Phil.
Yeah. So this is going to be something for people, but that's what we're doing next week. Hopefully people start to go see other movies, because now it's almost like Barbie and Oppenheimer have broken the film industry in the opposite way, where now it's become too much of a success. But that's what we'll be doing.
2 weeks. Gran Turismo. Two more weeks, and then good movies start coming out again.
Yes, I'm very excited for that, because I'm tired of struggling to figure out what are we going to watch. But we'll see how Gran Turismo is. So we'll be watching Gran Turismo. We'll be watching The Avengers. And we'll be back next Monday night, right? Are you good Monday night? I know it's Labor Day here in the U.S. But
it's Labor Day here, too.
So you're off, too?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, we're doing this sometime early. I'm not doing this at 8 o'clock at night. Tune in for a mid-afternoon matinee, because I don't think we're going to be doing this one late. But thank you all for listening. Hope you enjoy it. Become patrons. Patreon.com/Survivor Specialist. You can listen to us talk about movies. You can come join the Discord, where we try to get the conversation going as best we can. And that's it. We'll talk to you all next week.
Bye.